carries then to item 348.
Accept Portland Bureau of Transportation 2015 Traffic Safety Report.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues and fellow Portlanders, when we hear about a death or a serious injury on the roads, we feel terribly sad, and I think that sometimes we feel helpless. I think that when we hear the statistics and the context on these crashes, we will still feel sad, but we'll feel somewhat less helpless. I really appreciate Commissioner Fritz for suggesting that we have a formal presentation at Council of the Traffic Safety Report. I think that it's important to look at the data and realize, for example, that
I'll be right back. Hold on.
We do better than most cities. We do better than we did 30 years ago at avoiding fatal or traffic crashes and crashes that involve serious injury. But we don't do as well as some cities. We don't do as well as we should. So I think that when you hear the data, you realize that we should be sad, we should not be satisfied, but we should not feel helpless. And now I'll turn it over to Margie and Leah.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Leah Treat, Director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation, and I'm joined by Margie Bradley, who is the Division Manager for Active Transportation and Safety. And I'd also like to point out and thank Sergeant Vopel from the Portland Police Bureau, who has joined us today as well. So I had talking points that I am going to go over, but last night as I was getting ready for this time certain today, I came across an article that really struck me, and I would, if you'll indulge me, I would like to read a little bit of this article to you. It's from The Atlantic, and they're talking about traffic safety and roadway fatalities. It says, "Cars' most dramatic cost, they waste lives. They are one of America's leading causes of avoidable injury and death, especially among the young. Oddly, the most immediately devastating consequence of the modern car, the carnage it leaves in its wake, seems to generate the least public outcry and attention. Jim McNamara, a sergeant with the California Highway Patrol, where officers spend 80% of their time responding to car wrecks, believes such public inattention and apathy arise whenever a problem is massive but diffuse. Whether it's climate change or car crashes, he says, if the problem doesn't show itself all at once, it's hard to get anyone's attention. Very few people see what he and his colleagues witness daily and up close, what hurtling tons of metal slamming into concrete and brick and trees and one another does to the human body strapped or all too often not strapped within. In contrast, a roadside wreck is experienced by the vast majority of drivers as a nagging but unavoidable inconvenience, just another source of detours and traffic jams. Increasingly popular and powerful smartphone traffic apps eliminate even those brief close encounters with the roadway body count, routing savvy drivers away from crash-related congestion. The typical car wreck is becoming all but invisible to everyone but those who are killed or maimed and those whose job it is to clean it up. Many are aware at some level that troubling numbers of people are injured and die in cars, but most remain unfazed by this knowledge. This disparity and inattention between plane crashes and car crashes cannot be justified by their relative death tolls. Quite the contrary. In the 14 years following the terrorist attacks of 9/11, there were 8 crashes on American soil of passenger planes operated by regional, national, or international carriers. The death toll in those crashes totaled 442 people. That averages out to fewer than 3 fatalities a month. The death toll on America's streets and highways during that same period since 9/11 was more than 400,000 men, women, and children. The traffic death toll in 2015 exceeded 3,000 a month. When it comes to the number of people who die in car wrecks, America experiences the equivalent of 4 airline crashes every week. A normal day on the road, then, is quite a catastrophe. Ken Kolsch, the statistics for the National Safety Council, calls it that, and he ought to know. He makes his living crafting the annual statistical compendium of every unintentional injury and death in the country. Car crashes are the leading cause of death for Americans between the ages of 1 and 39. They rank in the top 5 killers for Americans 65 and under, behind cancer, behind heart disease, behind accidental poisoning, and behind suicide. And the direct economic costs alone, the medical bills and emergency response costs reflected in taxes and insurance payments, represent a tax of $784 on every man, woman, and child living in the United States. The numbers are so huge, they are not easily grasped, and so are perhaps best understood by a simple comparison. If U.S. roads were a war zone, they would be the most dangerous battlefield the American military has ever encountered. Seriously, annual U.S. highway fatalities outnumber the yearly war dead during each Vietnam, Korea, Iraq, Afghanistan, the War of 1812, and the American Revolution. When all the injuries from car wrecks are also taken into account, 1 year of America driving is more dangerous than all those wars put together. So if you, thank you for indulging me on that. I thought it was just said much better what I wanted to say today than I could have put together in words myself. So on to the data that we want to present to you today about the city of Portland and our traffic fatalities. Unfortunately, we have lost 37 lives on Portland roadways last year. That's more tragic than the number of homicides we saw in our community. And this year, the pace of traffic fatalities has been worse. And indeed, it has been a very rough start to our year. We have lost 14 lives in crashes already in 2016. 8 of those fatalities are in East Portland. This statistic is sad, but it is not surprising. Did you know that if you live east of 205, you are 2.5 times more likely to die on our roadways? That's why we held a press conference last week. Thanks to the leadership of Commissioner Novick and the support of our state legislature, and in particular Representatives Reardon, Fagan, and Vega Peterson, to highlight the installation of a rapid flash beacon at Stark and 151st. We are joined by our partners in the Police Bureau, who also conducted a crosswalk enforcement action at the same time. The beacon that we installed at Stark and 151st was one of 19 rapid flashing beacons that were paid for by state funding. Since 2012, we have improved safety at 34 crossings in East Portland, and we are currently working on designing and constructing over a dozen more beacons in East Portland. We also held the press conference to convey our sense of urgency and our commitment to reaching zero traffic fatalities and serious injuries. And it was also a moment for us to recognize Chief O'Day and the Police Bureau for their rapid response to the increase in fatalities. Their increase in traffic patrols focused on traffic safety is exactly the kind of response we need. And thank you to the Police Bureau. They have been great partners. So these are our overall trends in fatalities, for including 2015. 37 people died in crashes in 2015, which was an increase in fatal crashes compared to 2014. And looking at the history of traffic fatality for Portland, going back to 1925, we have seen an overall downward trend. However, over the past decade, progress toward reducing the number of fatalities has remained stubbornly elusive. So these are our fatalities by mode. In 2015, 20 occupants of cars and trucks were killed in traffic, which was an increase over the previous year when 7 occupants of cars and trucks died in traffic crashes. The motor vehicle trend over the last 20 years has shown a significant decrease in vehicle fatalities, primarily because of improvements in vehicle safety technology and seatbelt usage. Motorcycle fatalities stayed constant at 5. Bicycle fatalities doubled from 1 to 2. The best news, even if we could say something like that when discussing fatalities, was that in 2015, pedestrian fatalities were down, with 15 fatalities in 2014 and 10 fatalities in 2015. Unfortunately, only a few months into 2016, we are seeing the pedestrian fatalities go back up again. Out of the 14 who have died on our streets this year, 5 of them have been walking. Overall, among roadway users, people walking are at greatest risk for being seriously injured or killed. Despite making up just 9% of roadway users, people walking comprise 31% of Portland's traffic deaths. So now I'd like to transition to some of the conclusions that we have reached as part of our work on the Vision Zero Task Force. Crashes often involve multiple factors. The factors that we are seeing in 2015 and now in 2016, such as impairment and speed, are consistent with the trends over the past 10 years. Based on 10 years of data, impairment is involved in 56% of deadly crashes. Impairment includes both drinking and drugs. We do not know yet how the legalization of marijuana is going to impact this trend, but we know that the Portland Police, with the leadership of Captain Sheffer, is working towards how to best detect and test for marijuana in drivers. Captain Sheffer believes it is underreported in this data because law enforcement have not yet found a reliable test. Second, speed is a factor in 47% of fatal or serious crashes. Speed kills. It's really that simple. We have known for a long time that speed is a contributing factor in many crashes, and that's why I worked with Commissioner Novick and Representative Reardon to champion the fixed speed camera bill and we continue to pursue ways to lower speeds on the roads of Portland. Third, people disobeying traffic laws is involved in 51% of fatal crashes or serious injuries. Examples of this type of infraction include disregarding a stop sign or a traffic signal, and it includes all modes. For example, it would include a car driving the wrong way on a road, but it would also include a bike going through a stop sign. Distracted driving is included in this data set, although as we have discovered as part of our work in the Vision Zero Task Force, our data on distracted driving is poor. Oregon does not have a comprehensive distracted driving law. So in other words, police officers in Oregon often cite careless driving as a contributing factor to a crash, whereas there's no place on the crash form to similarly report distracted driving. But we do know it's a major problem. According to the Centers for Disease Control, over 3,100 people in the U.S. were killed from distracted driving last year, so we know that's a problem. Fourth, based on our data, road design on our high crash network plays a role in 47% of fatal crashes in Portland. So in other words, the high crash network in Portland makes up for 7% of the centerline miles of roads in our city, but accounts for 47% of fatal crashes. This is a map of our high crash network. As part of our comprehensive Vision Zero strategy, we have realized we need to move toward a better analysis of those roads that are the most dangerous. We have started to move away from the idea of high crash corridors and are now examining a high crash network. We feel this change is going to give us a more accurate understanding of the problems on our roads. And you can see that most of the roadways are our multi-lane, higher-speed arterials.
That numbering is not rank order, right?
It is rank
order. It is rank order. Okay, thank you.
We have additionally overlaid the high crash network with a communities of concern layer from TriMet's Equity Index, the dark gray areas on the map. Both the high crash network and the communities of concern layers help PBOT and our partners identify the highest priority areas for traffic safety investments of our limited resources. And last, our next steps on our Vision Zero action plan. I'm very honored to be leading the Vision Zero Task Force on behalf of the city to develop our Vision Zero action plan. The city, our regional and state partners and stakeholders are planning a multi-pronged approach to make Portland's streets safe. The plan is going to include 2-year and 5-year actions, and the actions under discussion include education, enforcement, policy changes, and infrastructure changes. In May, we are going to convene the executive committee of our Vision Zero Task Force. That committee includes Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick, and the committee is going to have a community listening session and also present some of the initial findings of our task force. And we are going to be back to council in the fall for a full briefing on our task force finding and to talk about our next steps on the action plan. That concludes my testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you both. Questions?
First, Leah, I want to say just personally that of all the things that you and Commissioner Novick have championed in your brief tenure here, how long have you been here?
2.5 years.
I'm sorry, not so brief.
I'm fine when you're having a lot of work.
In the 2.5 years that you've been here, I think of the many things you've done that you both can be justifiably proud, I think the Vision Zero thing may be among the most important. And I want to just comment on the gap between our aspirations in terms of the values proposition and what we're seeing on the streets. And it's interesting, no matter how the mayoral election turns out, come next January, I'll be the only member of council living on the east side of Portland. And I can tell you, my experience driving on the east side of Portland has not been good lately. And while I don't have to go very far, I live in Grant Park, I drive on some streets that are really under a lot of strain right now, and particularly Sandy Boulevard. And I recently sent you an email, and I really appreciated the response I got. In fact, I sent you an email, and I got a response that weekend. And that's about as responsive as you can get, and I'm grateful for it. And what I did is I highlighted some of the worst behavior that I see routinely. And I shared with you that I'm trying an experiment as a driver. I'm not a saint on the road. I have in the past received parking tickets. I have done other bad things in my life on the road. So I don't presume to be the exemplar of exemplars. But I guess having 2 children And growing older, I'm more aware of these issues. And so I've been doing a little experiment, which is following the law to the letter as I drive around. And what I have found increasingly is that I am a hazard to others. And it's alarming to me. By driving the speed limit on Sandy, which is 30 miles an hour, I'm a hazard because people angrily go around me and shake their fist at me because it's like I am holding up progress. And most of the time, it's people going 50% or more faster than the law allows in order to get to the next intersection ahead of me, putting everyone at risk along the way. So I asked you about some of the common things that I see. U-turns and intersections. People are routinely making U-turns in our intersections, and most of the time they seem to be on their phone. Well, that's a Class C misdemeanor, which could cost you between $150 and $250. Speeding. We have people that I observe routinely going between 10 and 30 miles over the speed limit. In Portland, that'll get you a $110 up to a $450 ticket. Failure to use turn signals. I think for some people that has now just become discretionary. That's a Class D, that's $110. Aggressive, dangerous driving. If you engage in aggressive, dangerous driving, you can be fined up to $450. If your reckless behavior causes serious injury, it's $12,500. You must go into a diversion program and you must appear in court. And so I looked at all the stuff you gave me, and I really appreciated seeing both the statutes and the fine schedules. And I guess the point that I want to make is, because I think what you're doing is so important, I want to volunteer, as I'm assuming all my colleagues want to volunteer, to figure out how we can help you achieve this goal. The goal of Vision Zero is noble. And the statistics you've just given us are stunning because they remind us that most of these are preventable deaths or injuries. If we stopped distracted driving, if we slowed down, just some of the basic common sense things, we can save lives. And I often feel powerless when I'm around people egregiously violating the law. I mean, I guess what I often do is just point to the sign that says 30 miles an hour if someone is, you know, going past me at twice the speed. But I have no authority to intervene. But I think this is critically important. And as there are more cars on our roads and more people that are kind of stressed out and there's more conflicts between user groups, it makes what you and Steve have said as the goal more important. And I want to volunteer for whatever service you need to make this work. And it literally drives me crazy to see the kind of reckless and careless and selfish driving that I see on a regular basis on the roads. And my impression is it's getting worse, not better. And I'm not entirely sure that there are folks that fully understand what the consequences are of their behavior. And so whatever it is, I want to sign up. And I'm just deeply grateful that you've set this audacious goal for our community. And I think the council over the next few years has an obligation to follow your lead and to fund it and to make sure that the word gets out and to do whatever we can to save those lives. So thank you.
Commissioner Fish, thank you so much for your comments and your support. I will say we are going to need you. We're going to need the rest of the council. When we come to you in the fall with our action plan, the types of things that we're looking at addressing are going to take changes in law, many at the state level, so we're going to need support at the legislature. We're going to need help ensuring that not only our sister bureaus in the city of Portland are coming to the table with us and putting all of their energy behind the same effort. We're going to need help from Multnomah County. We're going to need help from the private sector, nonprofit. And we have all those people at the table on our task force, but it really makes a huge difference when there's political leadership behind the staff asking for actions to be taken.
I would be honored to join Steve on one of his stings. I have a bunch of ideas that if we could follow up, and I just give you one because you've said you're going to seek some legislative changes. I was surprised to learn, and again, in your very responsive memo, I was surprised to learn that under state law, we are so generous in allowing vehicles to stop, double park in places on the road. And there's some language that explains the sort of exceptions and the loopholes. The thing that I've noticed with increasing frequency is vehicles in very congested areas double parking at the intersection and then waving you along as if it's a smart move to go around a vehicle into oncoming traffic at an intersection. And, you know, I'm willing to roll the dice in my life, but I'm not going to do that. And I think there's some common sense rules. I mean, I personally think double parking in the mid-block is less dangerous than at the intersection. The one thing we know about an intersection is you're going blind in multiple directions. And I just think there's some updates we ought to consider, and I hope you canvass all of us for suggestions. And then again, you know, please count me in.
Thank you both very much. Other questions? And then, Steve, you have invited speakers beyond our staff. I know there may be some folks that want to speak on this item, but
I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you both very much. We'll see if there's anyone signed up to speak on this report.
We have one person, David Davis.
Okay. Come on up.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you both. Come on up. If you want to speak on this item, come on up, please. Thank you. Yes, I saw. Yes. Good morning.
So I wanted to say, you know, I think it's good to reduce traffic deaths and stuff, but I also wanted to point out that the Portland Bureau of Transportation is directly involved with killing homeless people by having homeless sweeps and coordinating a lot of the homeless sweeps. So I'd like to see the same vision of zero deaths for homeless people. And I think one of the ways that you could do that is by stopping a lot of the sweeps, because sweeps are known for killing people. And so I think it's kind of a contradictory that, you know, that motorists and bicyclists and pedestrians are put on this pedestal of safety, but homeless people basically are being killed by these same agencies that are supposedly there to stop traffic fatalities and other stuff, you know. So I don't think that the police and Portland Bureau of Transportation and ODOT and all these people should be conducting homeless sweeps and killing people, especially under a homeless state of emergency. And, you know, this is a I just see one class of citizens and all these various groups that get protection, but I don't see the homeless. And you know what? The homeless are an all-encompassing group of people, which include every race, gender, you know, sexual preference, etc. So, you know, these homeless sweeps are still going on. They're being coordinated by the same people that are supposedly all interested in safety issues, you know. So basically I'm wondering if you guys are going to maybe tell PBOT to stop sweeping homeless people and killing them, because I'd like to see the same vision of zero deaths amongst the homeless that, and you guys are free to comment if you want.
Thanks very much. Mr. Walsh, I think you're next.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. Often in my travels, I have to cross an area down by the MAC station on Division. And what happens when you cross that main street is you hit a button that warns you to be very careful because the cars may not stop. The problem is when you're crossing the street, the first lane is not a problem because you can see them stop. It's the second lane. If that second lane is open, I've almost been hit at least three times by cars going right through. No stop. 30 miles an hour. I mean, I'm kind of small. 30 miles an hour is going to squash me. Another area that I have to cross is when I go to Aventis Pavilion at Main Street when I get off the MAX. I go to the light and I push the button and it changes the light from green to red. All the cars stop, including the 15 bus. So it's a very busy area. So then the question becomes, why in that area do we stop all of the cars for the person walking across, but on a MAX, we don't? Why is that? It's very dangerous. And I'm very cautious when I cross that area because I've almost been here three times. Every time I get in that street, I can feel the hairs on the back of my head really getting nervous. So if you want to do something, I get the impression over and over that we do things on the cheap and we pay a price for it. And the person making the decision to do it on the cheap, like just pushing a button and saying, be careful crossing. No kidding. If you do it on the cheap, somebody's going to get killed. Sooner or later, somebody's going to get killed. I don't know if there's any statistics on that area, but I'd be interested to find out. Thank you very much.
I think there probably are. Thank you. Good morning.
I'm Shedrick Wilkins, and my own personal opinion about cars is they kill people. My cousin, when I was 12, I do not drive, ever had a car, because I had a cousin that was 12. When I was 12 in 1967, he was killed in a car wreck because he did not have a seatbelt on, and it was a 30-mile-an-hour crash, and his mother was driving him to school and checked in the back seat to see if he had spilled a Coke and crashed into a tree. In 2005, my father was getting old. He should have given up his driver's license. By the way, on that story, my uncle was irony of the thing, he was a superintendent for an oil company, which powers the cars. That was his only son. In 2005, my father drove, and he was 77. He should have given up his license. This is a comment about older drivers. He lost it on the freeway. We hit the barriers. Luckily, there were water things. They're taking an exit. My son had his seatbelt on. Okay, he lived. And by the way, it was a kinetic impact at 30 miles an hour, just hitting the back seat that killed my cousin. And there's another sign there that I see cars as killing machines, and probably the number one cause of accidental death. And those are just two traumatized stories. All, by the way, because of the experience of the car wreck in 2005, when my son was 10, he does not drive. Most high school kids want to get a driver's license. It really turned him off.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I don't drive.
Good morning.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. I'm really surprised the Bureau Director walked out. She's learning a lot from you, Commissioner Novick. Hopefully she'll keep walking out the back door. It's very important that Bureau Directors, that after they do presentations, also listen to the public, whether they like their ideas or they don't. It's just very important that they do. It's very disrespectful just to walk out and have no consideration for what the public has to say. Now, my issue, and hopefully since Commissioner Novick is here, I'd like to have more studies done on the pedestrian deaths. I'd like to have more studies done to have an understanding that a lot of people have handheld devices this day and age, from the smartphones to all different types of devices. I want a study to look at that very close to see if those are tied into these type of accidents. If we want to look at doing a possible ban on texting while you're walking, having headphones on while you're walking, and get a clear understanding on that, if that does equate to the pedestrian deaths, the numbers increasing in the last couple years, and to try to look at this very close and maybe look at a solution to minimize those type of pedestrian deaths due to handheld devices. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Those folks that were signed up to speak.
That's all I have.
I have a motion to accept the report.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Fish?
Steve, thanks again for framing the issue, for setting an audacious goal, for leading on this issue. As I said, I think this is
potentially going to be one of your most important legacies about educating the public about more rational behavior on the streets, and then coming up with the various legislative and other fixes to make our streets safer. And I thank you for your leadership on this. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you for this report, and I look forward to the report of the task force in the fall. I do hope the task force, you know, Mr. Lightning just brought up a good point about should we consider issues around pedestrians in the crosswalks being able to text or have earbuds. I think some cities have actually started to make that illegal, and I think that's something we need to look at. And I do think that all in all, we need to be more serious about distracted driving. I think we have an ambivalence in our society about it because many of us do it. And I think it's and I think motorists now think it's okay if you're at a stoplight, it's okay to be checking your iPhone for text and messaging. I believe that's still illegal under the law. So I hope, and I've mentioned this to the chief, I've mentioned it to the mayor, to the sergeant, you know, we need to be more aggressive. The violations are so rampant, it's just easy for the pickings. You know, post somebody at a corner in plain clothes, although the chief says they don't have to be plain clothes. They could be in uniform, and they can still write a lot of tickets. So I hope this task force will really get serious about that, because that's the thing that's on the uptick, distracted driving, and the consequences are terrible. So thank you again, and I look forward to the full report in the fall. Aye.
Novick?
I really appreciate Leah's and Margie's and the rest of the Bureau's work on this issue. I appreciate the service of all those on the Division Zero Task Force and everybody in Portland who's worked to improve traffic safety for years and years. Really appreciate Commissioner Fish's remarks and the support of the rest of the council. I want to talk for a second about the issue of speed, because as Leah said, it is literally true that speed kills. And sometimes we take actions to reduce, and it's important to note that it's not just the posted speed limit, but the shape of the roadway that affects how fast people actually drive. And sometimes we take actions to reduce speeding, which has the effect for some people of increasing the length of their trips, whether they themselves are speeding or not. I had a conversation yesterday with somebody who was really upset about what we're doing on Foster Road, where we're going from four lanes to two lanes and a turn lane. And we know that is going to increase the length of some trips by about 3 minutes. And some people are upset about that. And 3 minutes stuck in traffic can seem like a lot. But making that change is going to make it safer, for example, for children at Arleta Elementary School to walk to school. And I think part of the culture change that we've been talking about, and the Commissioner Fish is saying we need to make, is to get people to think differently about steps we're taking to improve traffic safety and get people to think, for example, that spending an extra 3 minutes on a trip is an investment in the safety of those children at early elementary school. And I think if you ask people, would you be willing to take 3 minutes a day in order to protect people's lives, I think they would say yes. We just need to get them to think of it that way. Aye.
Thank you, Commissioner Novick, for your leadership on this. As one of our citizen communicators said this morning, you are in the business of saving lives in all three of your bureaus. I particularly appreciate you bringing this report to us, and especially on page 5, the list of the people's names who were killed on Portland streets in 2015. I do notice that there is one name missing, the motorcyclist who was killed on September 20th of 2015. I tried doing a Google search and I couldn't find it either. I would encourage you, if somebody's watching and who knows the name of that person, to let Commissioner Novick know and to bring a substitute ordinance back on the consent agenda so that we can add that name, because it's important that we remember the names of the people who died on our streets, and almost every traffic crash is preventable. We need to get much more serious about doing that. It's been 81 weeks since Steve Fritz was killed in a traffic crash, And I'm happy to tell the council that the Oregon Transportation Commission has added more funding so that all of the barriers for the Fritz Fairchild Act will be installed before the deadline. They've now allocated $22.3 million as a result of your support to getting that bill passed in the 2015 legislature. So every place on interstate highways throughout Oregon where median crash barriers are necessary, they will be installed as soon as possible. So I feel certain that we can do similar things in Portland that will increase barriers so that people are protected. I note that the mode share of pedestrians who are killed is way more than the mode share of the number of pedestrians, and we need to be careful not to blame the victims in recognizing that it's the vehicles that kill the pedestrians, and that the speed has been noticed is often a factor in that. As I drive down to Ashland every year with my daughter to see plays, and why I use the GPS, even though it's quite clear once you've got onto I-5 how you're going to get down to Ashland, it's remarkable to me how long you have to drive at the speed limit to catch up on even a minute on time that you've lost at the beginning after you've been in a traffic backup. 3 minutes is really not that long, and what I've started doing is looking at the clock in my car when I'm stuck in traffic and getting annoyed and realizing, no, actually, I have only been there for 3 minutes. That's not that long in the grand scheme of things. We all need to be sharing the road and being more careful in how we do that on bicycles, in cars, as pedestrians. They're our streets, and we need to be more careful, and we need to do the things that fund the programs, including not only the physical barriers, but the training for police officers, especially now with marijuana. We need to be able to fund the training that allows them to arrest people who are driving under the influence of marijuana. So that's something that I'm going to be talking with the council about over the next few months and working with the police to make sure we have that annual training. Again, thank you so much for bringing this report. It's so important. Aye.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Novick and PBOT, and I want to thank Sergeant Bobelt for being here, because it does take the classic three E's, education, engineering, and enforcement, for us as a city government to have an effect on this crisis. But I think at a different level, first it has to start with our own hearts and minds. thinking a little bit about this is a public health issue. You know, it was once possible to smoke in this chamber. In fact, members of the city council smoked in this chamber. But it became understood that that's a public health problem, and that smoking kills you, and you shouldn't do it around other people. Our hearts and our minds changed based on the facts. The facts are here. Leah recounted the dismal factual record of what we lose in our community and in our country every year to traffic fatalities and injuries. So first we have to change our hearts and our minds, and then we have to speak really clearly about the issues at hand. And one way I try to do that is to remind everyone that driving is not a right. It's a privilege. That's why we issue a license. I don't need a license to exercise my right of free speech. But for the privilege that the community grants me to drive on the public's streets and roads, I'm given a license. That license can and should be revoked when my behavior on that common space is unacceptable to the community. So those words matter. Automotive homicide is homicide. Automotive assault is assault. Negligence, i.e. driving while trying to send a text message, is negligence. Those are crimes. We need to be clear with both our hearts and our words about what's at stake here. That alone won't solve the problem, but I think it's the foundation to solving the problem, much as understanding that smoking is inherently dangerous started a trend there in the right direction. So thank you for your work on this issue. The Police Bureau and I are committed to being effective partners in Vision Zero, and we need 600,000 other partners in the hearts and minds and actions of our neighbors and our friends. Thank you very much. Aye. Okay, now we have